Bringing you the latest research, tools, and common sense tips you need to get and stay healthy. It's Talk Healthy Today. Here's Lisa Davis.
One of my favorite things about social media is finding beautiful pictures of food. Yes, ever since I was a little girl, you know, it's funny, my sister and I used to flip through magazines and look at pictures of food. Now, part of the reason was my mother was a horrible cook, but I'm sorry, it was true. Everything was bland. There was no flavor. So we would just look at these foods and be like, oh my gosh, if only I can eat this. Well, I am in heaven when I am looking at all the gorgeous foods that are made by the wonderful Heather Christo, who joins us now. We're going to be talking about her fantastic book, Pure Delicious, 150 allergy-free recipes for everyday and entertaining. No gluten, no peanuts, no eggs, no tree nuts, no dairy, no shellfish, no soy, no cane sugar. Holy cow. Hello, Heather. So glad to have you on Talk Healthy Today.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, you know, I've got to send my sister this book for a present because I think she'll be like, oh my gosh, it's better than all those magazines we ever looked at.
I saw the pictures.
Oh, the pictures are beautiful. The recipes, I made some, which we'll talk about. But tell us about you. When did you first get interested in cooking?
I've been interested in cooking my whole life, and I'm so sorry. I'm like, my mom was an amazing cook, and I grew up with that, and there were four of us children, and I kind of was the one of the four that adopted the role of soup. That's like, I always wanted to be in the kitchen with her. I always wanted to help, everything from setting the table to getting dinner ready. It was a passion really early on.
Oh, that's really good. Well, you obviously have a gift for it. Now, let's talk about the allergy-free part, because I think when people hear no gluten, no peanuts, no eggs, they think, okay, so what's in it? And of course, you know, I've been using whole food ingredients for a long time. I know that there's a lot of alternatives, but a lot of people are really stuck feeling like, well, I don't use wheat, or I don't use dairy, or I don't use eggs, or I don't use soy. What am I going to use? So talk to us about this and how you came to this way of cooking.
You're exactly right. And typically the first reaction I get is a consistent, well, what's left? And I always say everything is left. And it's really what you just said is about whole food ingredients. And so for me, I actually was a classically French trained chef. I went to culinary school and worked in restaurants and did private chefing for many years before I ever started my blog and got married and had a family. And I had continued to cook that way. And it was about 3.5 years ago when I noticed that my children were just having chronic health problems. And that kind of forced me to examine my own health. And I think a lot of times, especially in America, we're very like, and women, I might say in particular, kind of sweep it under the rug with everything else going on. And we don't really think about like, what does our best health look like? And I realized that I had had a lot of chronic conditions that had been going on forever, like starting with colic as a baby and moving forward. And now I was watching my very young daughters go through the same thing. But when you watch your child do it, it's a completely different experience, right? You're like, what can I do to change things? And I kind of did everything. It started with food, with journaling, because the doctors were really treating all of the problems symptomatically in my kids. And I just didn't feel comfortable having them on medications at 3 and 5 years old for all types of problems. And I just kept thinking, I know that there must be some umbrella issue that maybe we haven't figured out or we're not addressing yet. And that's when I started thinking about food. And I was not somebody who was like, I mean, I really got freaked out at the thought of gluten-free or like not eating dairy or anything. Like I was, it was particularly challenging for me. But once I made the adjustment, and we did that through like food journaling and then ultimately through food testing, and we just kind of went cold turkey on everything that everyone was allergic to in this house, which was close to 30 items between myself and my two daughters. Wow. And we developed our, I know that's crazy, we developed our own cuisine, which I call Pure Delicious, and it really falls back on whole foods. And then as I got kind of more knowledgeable about what I was doing, I played mad scientist and I really figured out a lot of the baking issues that kind of plague not just gluten-free baking, but when you go gluten-free and no dairy and no eggs, like we're getting into some complicated territory. But it's been, I mean, it's been a really amazing journey and it's been so worth it.
Well, Heather, I'm so glad that everybody's doing well. And I really commend you because I think for a lot of people, it's overwhelming when your kids have health issues. And if you go to the doctor and they give you a pill and you feel like, okay, I guess I'll do this. But to be a detective takes so much work and dedication.
There's no question. And honestly, that's why I wrote the book Pure Delicious. It took me over a year just to try to like piecemeal information on sensitivities and allergies and what do I do? And originally I thought, oh, you know, I'll just go on Amazon and like order a couple cookbooks and like a guide. And then I got there, I was like, oh no, there isn't anything like that. And so I really, like you said, did detective work. And I thought at the end of that journey, and I shouldn't say at the end because it's an ongoing journey, but at the end of that particular process, I thought if I could put all of these pieces of information together in one place, and it might help one family to have an easier time through this transition than we had, it'll totally be worth it. So that was how the
Well, you've done an incredible job. You know, Heather, because I have food sensitivities, and I can eat almost all of these things. The only thing I really can't have that you have in the book are sunflower seeds. But that's it. Everything else are sunflower butter. I'm really sensitive. It's so weird. But on the back of the book, okay, you've got these cupcakes that I'm just drooling over. We'll get to desserts, but I just had to mention it, okay, because you talked about figuring out the baking, and boy, did you figure it out. I want to jump into the most used ingredients, which is so great. You've got coconut oil, olive oil, coconut milk, and cream. I can't even tell you how amazing coconut is, isn't it? I mean, there's so many things you can do with coconut milk and coconut cream.
And it's so nutritious.
Yeah, it's so nice.
It makes me feel better about it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, it's great stuff.
Yeah, and it really emulates, like, we have little tricks with the coconut milk. Like, if you add apple cider vinegar, which I do in most of the baking recipes, it really acts like a faux buttermilk. So you get a tenderness and a lightness and, like, a little bit of acidity to your baked goods that you would get if you were using traditional buttermilk. There's a lot of things you can do with it.
Oh, that's fantastic. You've also got garbanzo bean flour, Bob's Red Mill, assorted flours, gluten-free rolled oats, pumpkin and sweet potato purees. You are singing my song. I love that. Beet sugar and so many great things. And when you can stock your pantry, have these things in the house, it makes a big difference. You've also got a section on appliances and tools. I just ordered a vegetable spiralizer. I haven't used it yet.
Oh, it'll change
I have
your
the
life.
Blender. It'll I know. I'm life. Excited. Oh, really? What do you like to spiralize? Everything?
Oh, my gosh. Everything. I mean, zucchini, yeah. But my current favorite is sweet potato because it's got Ooh. Like, you know, like a tooth to it. It really can feel yes. like you're eating like a good noodle, like an Asian style noodle or like it that's what it reminds me of. So it's my favorite currently.
All right. So tell us how you cook that, because my fear is if I was going to do that with a sweet potato, I would somehow overcook it and it would turn to mush. How do you do it? Is it a blanching situation to keep that toothiness
no.
and the noodle-less?
I mean,
no.
Okay. It is so brief. Like, so personally, when I do zucchini, I do it raw because exactly what you're talking about, it'll turn to mush. And then for a sweet potato, I really lightly saute it. And you can almost put it in a dry pan and start the process of like flipping it, like I have tongs out doing it. And then I add just a little bit of olive oil or coconut oil. I mean, really briefly, like maybe it's in there a minute. And then the carryover heat will help soften it a little bit. But if you go too far, you've got mush. So you have to be really careful.
Oh, okay. That is good to know. All right. Let's jump into some of these recipes. The recipe on the front, I am just wanting. It looks like a spaghetti and meatballs. Tell us about it.
Yes. Okay. So for my youngest daughter, Coco, her favorite meal on earth is spaghetti and meatballs. And it's probably mine. It's like what I would ask for once a year on my birthday, like kind of a funny, indulgent meal that I wouldn't normally make. And getting that just right was such a huge milestone in my family. These meatballs, I'm telling you, there's no dairy in them. There's no breadcrumbs. And they are so tender, like melt in your mouth meatballs. Mm. And should I give away what the secret is?
Oh, please do. Yes. I'm like on the edge of my seat.
It's dehydrated potato flakes. So it brings them together and it gives them a silkiness that is truly like, I mean, they're really good. They are really good. And so we got to a point in the winter months. It's been a really long, dark winter here in Seattle. It's like still winter. We were making that once a week because the kids just loved it. And they would then like take leftovers to school. And it just was a family favorite. And if you're trying to eat lighter, like I'll eat the meatballs with zucchini noodles or with salad. Like I don't have to have the huge bowl of pasta too. So I like it that it's like a family friendly meal, even if not everybody is going for the like half a pound of pasta with it.
See, that is so good to know. I tend to do the zucchini pasta. Another thing I like to do is I like to take spaghetti squash or butternut squash, and I like to use that as well. I did make your chicken chili verde. Super easy, super delicious. I am all about the Mexican. All about the Mexican seasonings. Love it.
For sure. There's a crunchy taco salad in there that we have all the time. It's in the book with the cilantro vinaigrette. Mm. That's a big favorite for us, too.
Oh, that is so good. I mean, I'm looking. Yeah, I'm going to find that. Oh, yeah. You know, I'm just overwhelmed. Number one, like I said, the pictures are so incredible. And then you go through the book and everything looks so good. And they're all ingredients that we can find, which is really nice. Because I think sometimes people think, well, it must be really wacky ingredients if they're not using like the basics.
You know what? It's really not, with the exception of some of the baking items. And I say, like, listen, if you want to invest in a product, you know, like gluten-free flour and you're not a big baker, like go for the small bag, like don't stress yourself out about it. But otherwise, like all of the savory recipes are truly just whole ingredients. And I intentionally developed all of the recipes like from October to February, because that's when you're the most limited fresh and that is available to you produce-wise. Because I wanted to create a book where people felt like they could go to their local Safeway or Trader Joe's or wherever was convenient for them. This is not a book filled with specialty items you have to source at the farmer's market. I really wanted it to be practical and attainable and easy for everybody to use.
You know, one of the things that I'm looking at, well, I'm looking at every single thing, but pasta with bacon, spinach, and chives. God, that sounds so good.
It is pretty good.
It is. There's so many great pastas out there, too. There's nice white bean pastas. There's garbanzo bean pastas. There's lentil pastas, which is really nice for people who are looking for more fiber or if they have a gluten 100% sensitivity.
100%. Quinoa, brown rice, like the blends of the two. We've got everything. We have like 25 kinds of pasta stocked in the cupboard. Because, you know, I have little kids and everybody, it's a fast meal. And you know what? On that point, I would say that a lot of these meals are like 30 minutes or less. Even when I wrote this book, my children, they're 7 and 9 now. But when I wrote this a couple years ago, like they were, you know, 5 and 7. Like I really needed it to be, again, practical. Like I would never expect people to be slaving away in the kitchen, you know, making these crazy meals on a daily basis. So it's meant to be family friendly, or at least busy life friendly.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely found that. You know, I noticed in the when we were talking about the ingredients in the beginning to have in your house, you had a gluten-free beer. And I thought, oh, I wonder what she does and with this. And then I found the beer braised brisket, and you have a gluten-free beer or pale ale. Even though it's getting to be hot now, at least in this area, and I mean, around here, it goes up and down. It could be 45 tomorrow and 95 the next day. But I still want to make this beer braised brisket. I mean, my mouth is watering. This looks so yummy.
Oh, good. It's delicious. And you know what? Funny enough, I use beer in a lot of the baking recipes, too. Somebody said to me the other day, oh, it's so interesting. You only have, I think there's just one recipe, the pizza crust, that uses yeast. Because there's a surprising amount of people that have yeast sensitivities or yeast allergies. So I use the beer as a leavening agent in a lot of the recipes, like in waffles. It gives them an incredible, like, fluffy, yeasty flavor and, like, a great texture. So it's been, beer is one of my magical ingredients.
Ooh, that's nice to know. You know, I've been jumping all over the place. Usually I'll be like, let's do soups and salads. No, I just, with this book, I'm just going crazy. I have loved Snickerdoodle since I was a kid. And you use all-purpose gluten-free flour. Now, is that something you can get from Bob's Mills? Is that what you recommend? Or do you put together your own sometimes? So tell us about that.
So listen, I could absolutely, I have some of my own blends, but again, going back to that practical piece, I don't want to do that all the time. Like, I'm a working mom and I have two kids and life is crazy and I want to pull a bag out of my cupboard and like use it. I can't do a cake mix or a cookie mix or anything like that anymore. So if I'm going to go scratch, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. And the brand that I really like is Bob's Red Mill gluten-free all-purpose flour. And it has a really high percentage of garbanzo bean flour in it. So it also has a higher protein count than most. But I find that bean flour like gives a great amount of moisture to the baked goods, and that's my personal favorite.
Now, is corn one of the foods that you're sensitive to or someone in your family is?
I actually am. So there are corn recipes in there because the rest of my family eats corn, and I know a lot of people like corn. And corn is not actually one of the main ones featured in this book, like be exclusive of. But I do have a corn sensitivity, so sadly. So I have to be careful.
I know, isn't it
that.
Tough? Well, the reason I brought it up is because I found these chips that I'm thinking would go so well with the chicken tacos with cilantro pesto or these tortillas. It's by Siete. So Siete is seven in Spanish. And it's this family that somebody in their family was allergic. And they're like, how are we going to eat all of our favorite, you know, home-cooked Mexican foods? And they're made from, I know the ingredients in my head because they're so incredibly good. It's cassava flour, coconut flour, chia seed, and salt. And they're fried in avocado oil. It's insane.
I have it up on my computer right now, and I'm going to order some. And that's so funny.
Can I just say unbelievably good? I think you'll love them.
Oh, my God.
And they taste, there's something Cornish about them. Yes, and they make tortillas. Also from almond flour, they have Siete de tortillas, and they also have the coconut flour. And I found these are fantastic because if I want to do something Mexican or if I want to make nachos, or even though I don't usually eat dairy, I can make nachos with some beef or beans or cilantro, the whole thing. And I can use those Siete chips, and you kind of feel like you're eating corn. It's pretty great.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. I'm looking at all the tortilla stuff. I'm looking at it all online. It's happening.
Yay!
And that's so funny.
Oh, I'm so
glad. I
bought
a big bag of cassava flour the other day because I have a girlfriend, Lisa, from Downship, who's a sealer, and she made tortillas with cassava flour. And I was like, I have to try that. Because I've been just going without, and it's a travesty. So thank you. Great tip.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, you know, it's funny because I bought a bag of cassava flour. Oh my gosh, it was so expensive, and it's still sitting in my cupboard. So once I found these these products by Siete,
yeah, it is.
And I can get mine right at Whole Foods, I'm like, I'm just going to get them there. But yeah, it is nice because there's something about that crunch. But I didn't need it. Like when I made that chili verde, I didn't feel like I was missing out at all. But I'm just saying it's kind of nice
I'm
if
so
you feel
glad.
Like you want. Yeah, oh, of course, if you want.
Everybody
if you want a chip.
Cool. Yeah, chips and guac sometimes, it's necessary.
Exactly. Well, you know, in the appetizers, you have a beautiful, it looks like a pesto. This is the one, it's right by the appetizer page. So I don't know, maybe I didn't see it in here, but you have some kind of chips. I think those look like pita or some kind of,
tortilla chips. Wait, I'm sure they're tortilla chips, because trust me, the whole rest of, I'll look it up right now, the whole rest of my family does not have a corn allergy, and I don't think any of them are willing to give up their chips. Oh yeah, yes, those are corn chips with the salsa verde.
Oh, that's a salsa verde. Okay, yes. Yeah. See, again, I immediately go right to the salsa verde. Although I was looking at this lemon artichoke hummus. Now, I can't have the tahini, but I can still make it for my family because both my husband and daughter love, 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 love hummus. So that looks
and
really good.
You could easily leave out the tahini.
It's okay. I was going to ask. Okay.
Absolutely. For sure. I make tahini free. We have a friend with a sesame allergy also. I just leave it out. It's still delicious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, this beet hummus looks interesting. It's beautiful color. It reminds me of borscht. My dad used to eat borscht when I was growing up, which always confused me. I'm like, what is he eating?
I love it. The girls call anything with beet, like, so this would be like unicorn hummus, or like I make a beet pesto and toss it with pasta. It's unicorn pasta. So what I love about doing pureeing beets, like in the hummus or when I make a pesto, I think it gives people who typically don't like beets, like a pause, and then they'll try it. Like my sister is disgusted by beets in their whole form, but she will eat beet hummus. And so I take that as a win.
Oh, good. Because beets are so good for you. You know, another recipe I'm looking at is the rosemary chicken salad with avocado and bacon. If you have something else about beets, I'm sorry, I just saw this and just jumped right in.
No, you know what? This has been a crowd favorite. This is like one of my favorite salads. And a bunch of bloggers like found this recipe when they were going through it. And I cannot tell you how many people now have said this is their favorite recipe. Like it's probably one of the crowd favorites out of the whole book. It's something I feel like you could eat like three or four nights a week and be just fine.
Sounds good to me. Now, I've been mentioning some of the ones, I want to make them all, but some of the ones that really jumped out. What are some of yours that I didn't mention? What are some of your favorites?
I'm a huge Brussels sprouts fan. So especially in the cooler months, or even like I grow Brussels sprouts. So starting in August, we get them popping up. But I love the Brussels sprouts with bacon, red onion, and avocado. That's like a huge favorite for a side dish. In the appetizers, there's a green, like a Castelvanos olive tapenade, Castelvetrano. I always say it wrong. Castelvetrano olive tapenade, like those really buttery green olives. You know what I'm talking about? And they're, you can usually find them in the if your grocery store has an olive bar. That is one of my favorite things to just set out with, like rice crackers or even cucumber slices. It's so good. People are always like, oh my gosh, what is this? It's so delicious. The spaghetti and meatballs for sure is a favorite. There's no question. And then we make, probably every weekend, we do the waffles or the buttermilk pancakes in this house. And banana bread is baked in this house every single week, like every week, like clockwork. So those are just a couple of our favorites in this house.
Well, before I let you go, we have a few minutes. Of course, I want to jump into Pia's famous chocolate brownie mug cake. All right, let's talk about this.
Oh my gosh, Pia is so funny. So this is now my 9-year-old. And when she was, Pia has the hardest list of allergies. And she actually, we didn't know when I wrote the book, but discovered soon afterwards, she's celiac. She also has allergies to dairy, eggs, soy, some tree nuts, peanuts. Garlic cane sugar is like a really severe one for her. And you know, like that is in everything, like every packaged food. And she's just a kid. Before I ever figured out baking, we were like, what can we give this poor child for a treat? And we had just been making mug cakes, you know, the old fashioned way with butter and flour and sugar. And we decided to try to experiment and make one gluten-free and vegan. And so she was really part of the process. And we got to a point where this is a recipe that she could make herself. And she would like whip it up in the blender and pour it in the mug. And even at 5 years old, she could go, you know, and microwave it herself. And she felt like very kind of self-sufficient and like she'd taken control of the situation. And when Pia was 6, she actually started her own food blog, which we thought was hilarious.
That's awesome. How adorable.
She was like, I'm going to start one for little kids with food allergies, and I'm going to put my favorite recipes on here, things that I'm interested in. So that's how she called it, Pia's famous, world famous chocolate brownie mug cake. Yes.
And she was so glad she can have beet sugar.
I am too.
Now, does she have coconut sugar then? Because of,
absolutely.
I know you use coconuts.
Anything outside of cane sugar. Yeah. And you know what? I have to be careful with cane sugar. My reaction is nowhere near as severe as hers, but my mother's actually is, which is an interesting testament for the fact that most allergy sensitivities are hereditary. So both of them are totally no cane sugar. So we found all kinds of alternatives, and beet sugar is the closest. It's a 1-to-1 ratio. Most beet sugar in the United States, or I think all of it, is GMO'd. So we actually buy ours on Amazon, and it comes from New Zealand, but it's not crazy expensive. It's from Now Foods, and they have a non-GMO organic beet sugar, if that's important to you. It is for us. And it's like a perfect, can't tell the difference substitute for cane sugar.
Oh, that is wonderful. You know, I wish we had more time. You have to come back because you are just the absolute best, Heather. I'm such a fan. Again, Pure Delicious, 150 allergy-free recipes for every day and entertaining. Tell us all the ways we can find you so everyone can drool over your pictures with me.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Well, my website, heathercristo.com, is always there. I publish 5 days a week new recipes. And then Instagram is probably the most like picturesque way to find me. So it's just at Heather Christo. And same for Facebook and Twitter. And I'll tell you, on Facebook, we do cooking classes twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific. And on Saturdays or Sundays, once a weekend, my girls do a cooking class on the weekend at 1 p.m. on Facebook Live.
Oh, my goodness. I have to see that. Heather, you are so fantastic. I want to thank everyone for listening to Talk Healthy Today. You can follow us on Facebook at Talk Healthy Today Podcast, Instagram at Talk_Healthy_Today, Twitter and Snapchat is at Talk Healthy, the number 2 day. I want to thank everybody. Get out and get this book by Heather Christo and check her out on social media. You'll be so glad you did. Stay well.